confident journalism has a future, and if so, what's it look like? This series, The Future of Journalism, explores that. I'm Peter Wilkinson with the Alliance for Journalist Freedom in Australia, and we say we need to know what the future looks like so we can plan to get there. We're at a watershed moment in Australia that will impact the future of journalism. A tug of war, and media organisations around the world are watching as the traditional publishers argue with Google and Facebook before the ACCC that those digital giants should pay for stories that they republish. There are arguments for and against, and two earlier people in this series, Piers Grove and Alan Soon, both publishers, are against it. Here, Greg Highwood is for it. Greg is a former journo, then the chief executive of the newspaper empire Fairfax Media, and oversaw major redundancies of journalists before assisting its merger into the Nine television network. He's now chair of Free TV, the industry body representing the free-to-air TV networks. So, Greg, there's a line of thinking that, sure, tax Facebook and Google as hard as we like, but the money shouldn't be used to throw a lifeline to the traditional publishers. What's your answer to that?
This is not a lifeline. I mean, this is, if people look at Netflix, people look at streaming businesses. Those businesses buy their content and they pay for their content. Now, what's happened with Google and Facebook is it's more an issue of monopoly power and how those companies pay an appropriate amount for content they use to make money through advertising. Now, the ACCC inquiry found that somewhere between 13 and 18% of Google content was news-based and came from traditional publishers. Basically, if they use someone's content to make money, there should be a fair payment for that content. And at the moment, because they are in a monopoly position in terms of their position in the market, they're not required, or they're not paying content. And the government has intervened, as government does intervene historically, to break down monopoly power.
So people like Piers Grove from the Batuta Advocate and the Daily Oz say they're comfortable with the situation with Google because it's a mutual relationship. They produce the material, Google and Facebook spread it out. So, and the same argument could be applied to you, could not, or to the large newspapers, that they produce the content and Google and Facebook give them a bigger audience.
Yes, but those companies do not have the quantity of the content at the cost of the content than the major publishers. So, for instance, something like Nine, a company which I'm partly familiar with because I used to be CEO of Fairfax, which merged those mastheads. Those mastheads now within Nine have something in the order of 450, 500 journalists. They spend something in the order of a couple of $100 million a year on editorial content. They put hundreds of journalists into the field every day, and they provide an important public service by making an effort not to advocate a certain position, but to find the truth. And that's expensive. And what they do within their economic model is that, sure, there's subscription revenue, but there's also advertising revenue. And that content, which is distributed partly through Google and Facebook, once it's distributed through those entities, Google takes all the advertising revenue off that. Now, all this is doing is rebalancing that power relationship.
So do you accept that the big mastheads, so the Sydney Morning Herald, The Age, and The Australian, are struggling because of legacy issues still?
It's not about legacy issues. It's not about in the sense that,
well, that
somehow that they're big and badly managed. I mean, these businesses are now, over the last 20 or 30 years of dealing with big structural change, are quite lean businesses, some leaner than others. The issue is that in various waves, the internet has, first of all, taken the classified advertising off, okay? And now this second wave with Google and Facebook took the display advertising away. Sometimes economies create monopolies through big structural technological change. Now, what's happened here is that, and in the 70s, the telcos were broken up because there was a monopoly there. What's happened here is that the world has found itself with two big players and not a marketplace. And those big players can use that market power not to pay for content.
So as you know, our interest is sussing out the future of journalism. Mm-hmm. And the argument, if you like, is whether the traditional mastheads are the future, or the future is with niche journalism, which is what people like Alan Soon, Piers Grove, and others have been saying, that the internet is a natural home for small communities. So a classic example would be Alan Kohler, and this is earlier days, of course, but the Constant Investor. Niche journalists or niche publications looking for niche markets, whether it's business, sports, celebrity, news, politics, and so on. And so big papers that try to cater, be all things to all people, don't work as well as niche publications.
Well, I don't think that's right. I mean, there's a couple of points to it. The first thing is that by putting a lot of journalists into the field every day and a publication bringing that down to 100 or so stories and putting them through the filter of a common set of values and an effort to find the truth, not perfect, but an effort to find the truth, that is a very important public service. And that is not, say those 100 stories were written by 100 different bloggers, no one would really have a sense that that filter of values and that filter of truth has effectively been laid over that exercise. So there is a common good around this, and it's a very important part and has proven a very important part of keeping liberal democracies alive.
And I think everybody would agree with you about the importance of journalism. Do you accept that the internet is a natural home for niche publishers rather than for broadsheet? I mean, clearly there's exceptions in the New York Times and the big global papers would be, or publications would be an exception. But it's more of a struggle for papers like The Australian, The Sydney Morning Herald, The Age, than it is for smaller niche publications. Do you accept that?
I absolutely accept that the internet is a great place for niche publications. And it has really democratized access to information, it's democratized access for people to provide their opinion. But let's not get absolutist about this, that it's one or the other. If you look back at media platforms in history, right, there were newspapers that were around for, you know, hundreds of years in some way, shape or form. Then along came radio. And then along came television, linear television. Then along came cable television, right? Then along came the internet. All of those platforms exist in one form or the other. So they're less dominant than they used to be, but they provide a certain function for the community that certain people in the community continue to use. And that's over a very long period of time. So yes, the internet provides absolute access for niche publications, but it's also providing a platform for those traditional publications. Now, they're not as profitable as they used to be, right? They're not machines that make the money that they once did, but they still have the funding, if they're fairly paid for their content, to continue that very important function that can sit alongside the niche publications.
So there's a line of thinking that says in 10, 15 years, journalism is going to look like this, that there'll be some big papers that have got global reach. There'll be a diminished Australian Sydney Morning Herald in The Age, and there'll be, but still existing, and there'll be niche publishers as well, and that journalism will be healthy, but much more diverse. Is that how you see the future of journalism?
I certainly see that as important, that we have that level of diversity.
So in this more let me try a slight change of topic with you. In this more diverse market where you've got the very big like the New York Times, you've got the smaller like the Australian, the Sydney Morning Herald, The Age, and then you've got niche publishers that cater to very specific audiences. The issue is going to be a much more diverse set of training for journalists. How would you feel about a voluntary certification program for journalists that encourages a set of standards and provides training?
Well, look, if it's voluntary, I think that's fair enough. And I think that if people, it's like any attempt to educate yourself, and it provides authority, and if there's an independent body that provides that certification, the people who want to enter the space may feel it adds value to their content. Because, you know, the effort would be, you know, here is a certification process, and it is expected that you will follow the values laid down in this certification. Now, the important aspect, and it's an important component here, is that if you're working in a broader company with long-standing values that have been put in practice over many years, decades, even more than 100 years in some cases for these mastheads, there is an underlying sense of confidence that brings to the quality of the content. So I think a certification process has value, but I don't think it could replace the value of hundreds of years of those values put in, of that effort put in.
Certainly the Alliance for Journalist Freedom, which is really keen on the certification program, doesn't think that the training programs in the ABC, News Limited and Nine aren't absolutely up to scratch. It's more for the more diverse areas, younger journalists coming up that haven't got the training programs in the smaller niche publications or in the regions or in the outer suburbs, where there's a real dearth of training, where a certification program would give them a sense of their status, or give other people a sense of their status.
Yeah, I certainly think in the context of the current in political environment, particularly coming out of the US at the moment, you're seeing attempts by institutions and very senior politicians and political parties to break down the standards of democracy that we've taken for granted for many, many years, questioning without valid reason the outcomes of an election is a dangerous thing. And I think people should understand that the liberal democracies that we've lived under for decades now are fragile beasts and need to be protected. And anything that helps in terms of training people around the importance of that, I think, is valuable.
So changing slightly again, as you know, and you've just alluded, as you know, the partisan nature of media has been increasing, not decreasing. What do you think of the battle, the war of words constantly between News Limited and the ABC?
Well, I think that a war of words, is nothing wrong with a war of words.
Well, the argument is that it reduces the trust in both organisations.
My view is this, that there is absolutely no doubt that media organisations determine who their audience is and go and meet the needs of that audience. And sometimes if it's News Corp, it's right of center. The ABC tries to, by its charter, be center of center, right? And there is going to be a clash within that contest of ideas. Now, there's absolutely no doubt that the volume around that clash has increased over recent years, but it has always been there. And frankly, I think it should always be.
Well, is it good or bad that the volume's increased? And in terms of the trust of journalism, the future of journalism and the confidence the public has?
Look, I think that I would be concerned, and there have been charges that some news organisations are giving up their pursuit for truth by advocating certain positions. And that is what some people have accused News Corp of and other people have accused the ABC of. These organisations are not perfect, and advocacy on the left and the right does occur. As a former manager of a media business, I find it's critically important that the management of these businesses make sure that that advocacy, right, is minimized and the pursuit of truth is maximized. That's the important thing.
Greg Highwood, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Peter.